This is an ABC podcast.
People are growing more food at home. They recognise the benefits of getting outdoors into green space, putting their hands in the garden and growing their own food.
Tonight we head to Tasmania, where concerns around food security have resulted in the Food Forest Program, an initiative to get more fresh food onto people's tables. And speaking of fresh food, with apples you might reach for any number of varieties, but could you do the same thing soon with strawberries?
When we release a white strawberry, we want it to be really good because we don't want to be releasing something that consumers taste and go, ugh. We want it to be mind-blowing, and so we're there with the blush, we're getting there with the white.
I'm Alex Simon and this is Australia Wide. Today we start again on the New South Wales mid-north coast, where there are still weather warnings in place, with significant rain and flooding in some parts. Reporter Claudia Jambor is in Caramba and she joins Australia Wide again. Claudia, can you paint me a picture of what the region is going through right now?
Well, where I am in Caramba, there's a little bit of a break in the weather and I can actually see a little bit of blue sky where I am, Alex, but this region has absolutely been drenched since Friday. The heavens opened up over the mid-north coast in northern New South Wales, where hundreds of millimetres have bucketed down on this region. In Caramba, I'm looking down a street at the moment where the Arara River has come right up and flooded parts of the end of that street. So I suspect there may be some minor flood damage, or at the very least some water coming right up close to people's backyards. And that goes for when we were driving along and up to Nana Glen earlier. Along that way, we did see floodwaters getting dangerously close up to people's houses. They've had, from, you know, big lush rolling views of farmland has now kind of become lake views. They've got water views now. Glen Ray, further north to where I am, is an inland island. There's no access in or out. All of the bridges have been inundated by floodwaters as the Arara River continues to swell from this continual rain. And further a little bit southwest of where I am at Bellingen, there's a major flood warning issued for the Bellingen River with Lavender's Bridge completely underwater, and that region is too soaked. So we're very wet here on the mid-north coast, Alex.
Just how much rain is falling in your neck of the woods?
Well, so far today we've had in excess of 100 millimetres fall in some parts. Out back of Dorrigo and Bellingen, they've had upwards of 100 or so millimetres, similar totals experienced out at Glen Ray, which is about the same. So, mind you, this 100 mils is on top of hundreds of mils that have fallen over the past few days. So we have had an absolute drenching up this way, hence those warnings for flood warnings issued for the Arara River and the Bellingen River and parts of the Kallang River as well. The system's now moving further south, where we've just in the last hour or so had minor to moderate flood warnings for the Nambucca River as well as the Macquarie and Hastings Rivers.
Claudia, as you make your way around the area, seeing what's going on and how this is affecting people, you've come across a Christmas tree farmer. What's happened there?
Well, a Christmas tree farmer just a little bit out on the outskirts of Caramba has been severely affected by this rain. About 4,000 of his young Christmas trees have been knocked down as a result of this heavy windy weather that we've had here over the last few days. So there's plenty of repair work there. He says he's lost about 160 sales. So that's 160 trees have been sold as a result. So he doesn't think he'll recoup those losses before Father Christmas comes to the door, but he's certainly hoping that the weather eases in the next few days so that he can hopefully get a few customers through the door to buy some of his Christmas trees. So we tried to get over there to the Caramba Christmas tree farm, but unfortunately the bridge was underwater, so we couldn't get across to have a face-to-face chat. However, we were lucky enough to get reception and chat with him over the phone. So let's have a listen to what he had to say a little earlier.
Most disappointed in having all this rain just now. It's a real effort for people to actually get out here and get their trees. But we've still got time. There's still another week before Christmas.
And how confident are you feeling that you'll be able to recoup the losses from the sales you've already lost so far?
Well, I don't think we'll make up the sales, but I'm fairly confident that if we get a clear weekend this weekend, we'll be able to pick up some of those losses.
And how many trees have been blown over in this weather?
Oh, I haven't had a chance to assess it, but by the look of it, it's probably 3,000 or 4,000.
Do you think most of those will be able to still be sold?
They're young ones, so they've got probably another year or 2 years before we sell them. So okay. Just a matter of straightening them up, and they should be okay. I think the weather system now is moving south, and hopefully tomorrow or the next day it will clear up and give us a chance to get back onto the farm on the weekend.
That's Caramba Christmas tree farmer Wayne Duver speaking there to our reporter Claudia Jambor. And she wasn't able to get over to his property because of the floodwaters, but was able to speak to him on the phone. And just finally, Claudia, from here, it's looking like the forecast will ease, that the rain will ease off from here?
Yes, it will. Hopefully, fingers crossed anyway. The Bureau of Meteorology has said today it will be the worst of the rain before the conditions start to ease. So later this week, Coffs Harbour is forecast to have up to 5 millimetres. So I think a lot of people will be very relieved at that point to have a drizzle of rain rather than the torrential downpours we've had in recent days.
Claudia Jambor in Caramba, thank you so much for speaking to Australia Wide.
Thank you.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
And you're with me, Alex Hyman, in for Sinead Mangan. It's great to have your company. Let's head further north now to the border riverside village of Chindera, where locals didn't seem too troubled by the floodwaters this morning in the lead-up to high tide. Reporter Kathy Border caught up with some locals, including the manager of Cubby Cafe, Daniel Creswell.
You are standing in floodwaters with a baguette in your hand.
Yep.
Why?
We just did an Instagram skit, and the baguette was meant to be a microphone. It was a live cross that we did with another staff member.
You've got floodwaters lapping at your front door. Am I right in thinking this is the first time since you've opened you've experienced a flood?
Luckily, it is. It's my first experience of one. It's not as bad as 2017, but I don't think we're that far off it, so we'll see how we go.
And you're still trading. You've still got customers having ready.
We're still open. You can actually still get to the shop relatively in a dry fashion, and we're just doing what we can, making the most of it, trying to get a few funny videos and just taking it all in, literally.
Your customers, their chairs are in floodwaters, their feet is in water, but everyone's quite happy.
Yeah, everyone seems to just be embracing it, and it is what it is at the end of the day. There's nothing you can do about it. You've just got to take it and hopefully watch it flow out. So we'll see how the next couple of hours go, and we'll just go from there. That's all we can do.
Don't intend shutting?
No, absolutely not. No, we'll keep people working, keep people, coming in, having a hot coffee, and we'll see how we go.
That's Cubby Cafe manager Daniel Creswell. Tony Roberts is the manager of the Chindera pub. He was also keen to open his premises despite the floodwaters.
Yeah, we're going to open, yep. The deck's going to be a great spot to catch the view and watch the river as it flows through.
There's already plenty of people out gawking, having a look.
Yeah, it's very busy, isn't it? Yeah. It's a phenomenal amount of timber in the river, though. That's the interesting part for me, is that the amount of debris that's floating down is just unbelievable.
Exactly right. It's huge, isn't it? And even I saw a stray kayak floating past at one stage.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of surfboards. I saw a poor old cow go down the river a while back as well. Terrible. Yeah, but anyway, we're expecting it to come up a bit more over the next couple of hours, but not expecting it to come into the building, I don't think, so we'll be right.
You're used to flooding at Chindera.
Yeah, we are. We're very experienced at it. Yeah, absolutely.
That's reporter Kathy Border in Chindera. She was speaking there to Tony Roberts. He's the manager of the Chindera pub. And remember, do take care around floodwaters and listen to the warnings for your local area.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
I eat corn sometimes and my mum cooks it in the oven.
Well, Charles, how much rain did we have? He said, no, none.
I said, you're mad, man.
ABC Australia Wide.
Because I came from Wynyard area where it rains and rains and rains. And when it's not raining, it's raining more.
On ABC Radio.
And it is Australia Wide with me, Alex Hyman. To Tassie now. The University of Tasmania research has found at the height of the coronavirus pandemic in April, 26% or one in every four Tasmanians could not afford to buy healthy food like fresh fruit and vegetables. But the pandemic is creating a resurgence of vegetable gardens in the Apple Isle. And as Manika Champ reports, many community groups are growing communal food forests to make the state's population more food secure.
Here we are, end of the year, and there's a whole range of garden beds and people have been growing in the ground, as well as these apple crates set up as wicking beds, which are working perfectly.
Jo Dean is teaching Launceston's newest residents how to grow their own food at the Harmony Community Garden at Mowbray. It's one of Tasmania's newest edible gardens.
Imagine coming here in September and it was a bare area, and look at it now.
And why did you think this was necessary to have this here at the Migrant Resource Centre?
Well, it's just a fabulous way to bring everybody together. There's been so much sharing around food plants. We have some plants growing here that has been part of people's journey here to Australia. There's some beautiful amaranth over there. There's just so much that is integrating culture here.
The garden also aims to improve the state's food security rates. Dr. Catherine Kent from the University of Tasmania's Centre for Rural Health has been keeping track of Tasmania's food insecurities during the coronavirus pandemic as part of the Tasmania Project.
So the Tasmania Project ran two surveys throughout COVID, and what we've found is that Tasmanians are unfortunately experiencing substantially higher food insecurity than pre-COVID. In April and May, we found that people were experiencing food insecurity about 26% of households. Later, in about August and September, we found that around 18% of households were still experiencing food insecurity, which is substantially higher than pre-COVID estimates of about 6 to 11%.
And when we're talking about food insecurity, in layman's terms, what does that exactly mean?
It means that Tasmanian households are able to put healthy food on the table every day.
Why do you think so many Tasmanians do struggle to access healthy foods?
During COVID, unfortunately, it has related a lot to a loss of income. But what COVID has shown us is that Tasmanians want more locally grown Tasmanian food. They want strong local food systems. They want supermarkets to prioritise Tasmanian foods. Also, self-sufficiency is on the rise. People are growing more food at home. They recognise the benefits of getting outdoors into green space, putting their hands in the garden and growing their own food.
Susan West is one person doing that in her small suburban backyard, and she even has two chooks.
We set up wicking beds and everything, so those ones you don't have to water as much.
And why did you want your own vegetable garden in your own property?
Well, it's cheaper than buying them, and I think they taste nicer. The tomatoes you buy don't seem to have as much taste as the ones that you grow.
Do you use this for all your home cooking?
Yes, we do.
What's your favourite thing to cook with?
Oh, anything really out of the garden. It's just nice. And the broad beans don't make it to the pot. I just eat them as I'm carrying them inside.
There's now more than 20 edible community gardens around Launceston, and more are planned to be planted. Eight communal fruit trees are now growing near community housing at Mowbray, which residents will soon be able to pick from. And as part of the University of Tasmania's plan to move its Launceston campus closer to the city, it's planning to create 15,000 square metres of green space, much of which will be taken up by a large community food forest. Here's the university's Pro Vice Chancellor, Dominic Geraghty.
What we intend to do is put in a large number of raised beds, ranging in 5x5 to 2x2 square metres, and these will produce substantive amounts of vegetables throughout the year, and we hope to use these to supplement the diets of our, you know, hungry students as well as the local community. But we'll be employing a full-time horticulturist to actually run the facility, because it is a substantive, I suppose you would call it, an urban farm.
It's hoped the food forest will be growing by the end of next year, a community determined to create a more food secure population.
That's Manika Champ there reporting from Tasmania.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And let's stay with fresh food. When people buy apples at the supermarket, they will often shop for particular varieties: Pink Lady, Granny Smith, Golden Delicious. And soon shoppers could be doing the same thing with strawberries. Rather than just grabbing any old punnet, people may reach for a particular variety of strawberry. Australia's leading strawberry breeder is on the quest to release a striking pure white fruit that is ripe when the seeds on its skin turn red. The novelty fruit is just a taste of the work being done on new varieties that create consumer choice and keep farmers in business. Here's reporter Jennifer Nichols speaking with Dr. Jodie Neal from the Queensland Department of Agriculture and Fisheries.
We're in the trial patch now, stepped over the electric fence. We're working towards, hopefully very soon, releasing a pure white strawberry that has red seeds on the outside. So this is one of the ones that will be the parent of whatever we release. It's pure white and white inside. And again, just creating a diversified product. Our blush strawberry was one of the parents of these guys. When we release a white strawberry, we want it to be really good because we don't want to be releasing something that consumers taste and go, we want it to be mind-blowing. And so we're there with the blush, we're getting there with the white. So this one looks like a good one here, if you want to grab.
That one there?
That one there.
Oh, that is pretty.
So white, and then with the seeds on the outside, with the contrast.
Yeah, they're just so different looking, but the red seeds make it, they're just beautiful. And that's how you tell that these ones are ripe, when they have red seeds, when they go red. These won't ever be commercially released because they don't have all the traits that we need, such as good shelf life and the flavour where we want it to be yet. So they're a work in progress. We'll use these guys and have already used these guys as parents and cross them with other plants that have the traits that we're wanting to improve and working towards getting a pure white strawberry that is commercially viable as well.
How much do you love what you do, Dr. Jodie Neal?
I actually really, really love what I do. Probably the biggest thing is actually being able to see the direct results of my work impacting farmers and consumers, and seeing that people are able to remain in business because of the varieties that we've been able to release, and that it's making a difference to actual communities and people. But I also get to eat a lot of strawberries, so that's pretty good too.
That is a good job. Dr. Jodie Neal from the Queensland Department of Agriculture and Fisheries speaking to Jennifer Nichols.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
Like, say the swimming carnival, I can tell them about how, like, the races are, and as well, there's a big carnival, like, where we show our house colours.
So you've never done that before?
No, not really, no.
It may be summer, but Tasmania's cooler coastal waters are providing the perfect environment for an increasing number of ocean swimmers. For some, taking the plunge is more than just a physical challenge, and they're finding cold water immersion also offers mental health benefits. Luke Bowden has this story from southern Tasmania.
Bronwyn Poulston-Jones has been ocean swimming for more than a decade. She swims with groups in southern Tasmania and Bishano, but her most therapeutic swimming is done alone.
Swimming is probably the only thing I find that will just kind of calm the mind when you're really struggling and nothing else you do will shift things.
During winter 6 years ago, Bronwyn was struggling with her mental health.
I thought I'd test it out and see what would happen if I kind of started swimming in the cold without my wetsuit, just to kind of shock myself back into living almost.
Water below 15 degrees Celsius is defined as cold. Immersion in that water activates receptors under the skin. Professor Mike Tipton heads the Extreme Environments Laboratory at the University of Portsmouth. He has studied the effects of extreme temperatures on humans for more than 35 years.
You get aroused, you get alerted. So this is why people say, well, you know, when I've been in cold water, I feel alive.
Val Ansett and Wyann Hale have been swimming in the ocean every day since May.
We started out with cold showers, but it seemed to make much more sense to just have a swim in the ocean.
The daily swim has strengthened their relationship.
It's sort of like a moment of stillness in the busyness of the day and of our lives.
With pools closed during the pandemic, the number of swimmers in the ocean increased significantly during winter. But those numbers have been on the rise for over a decade. One organised group has gone from 3 regular swimmers to over 40. Down here at South Arm, though, the take-up of the activity hasn't quite caught on.
No, we're still the only ones.
For those who are thinking of taking up cold water immersion...
Obviously have a health check first, do it with a club if possible, certainly do it with other people, and do it incrementally, and really at any stage don't stay in for more than 10 or 15 minutes.
For Bronwyn Poulston-Jones, the benefits are clear.
That's part of the addiction. You know that you are going to feel better. It is going to help.
Luke Bowden reporting there from southern Tasmania, and I'm not sure if I'm going to join them. Who knows? I'll maybe develop some bravery. You're on ABC Australia Wide.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Finally tonight, they say opposites attract, which is true for Zelda, the golden retriever, and Alan, the duck. The pair are best mates at their home in Albany, on the south coast of Western Australia. As owner Chris Tuvey explains, it all started when Alan was just a duckling.
We got Alan when he was 5 days old, and it all started just simply by sitting on the lawn and Zelda being curious and wanting to play with Alan, and it was just us enforcing to be gentle, and then Alan would just come and sit with her, and then it's just ended up being this friendship over the last 2 years.
You got a few dogs and you got a few ducks. Are they all friends or is it just Zelda and Alan?
They're all friends, yes. Zelda's grandma actually brought up a lamb. So she used to nudge it into the kennel and keep it warm at night time. And she used to share her dog biscuits with the lamb. And the lamb passed away last year at the ripe old age of 12. And Zelda's auntie, Snowy, she actually brought up Alan's son, Nigel.
This is an interesting family, the Tuvey household.
It is. Well, Nigel's growing up a bit confused, poor duck. He was actually, well, she, turned out Nigella, was hatched by a chicken until 3 days old and then brought up by the dogs, by Snowy, and then ended up laying eggs, so quickly turned from Nigel into Nigella.
I've just watched Alan the duck come up and greet Zelda the golden retriever. It's their kind of early evening catch-up, isn't it?
Yes. It's
6 o'clock-ish.
Yeah. Yep, usually around 6 o'clock, Alan will come up from the dam, and I think he's missed her during the day. So, yep, they greet each other in the morning when Alan's let out of his pen, and they greet each other with the same hugs, and then again in the evening.
It was so lovely to watch. There was genuine affection there.
There is, yes. Zelda will actually wimp if Alan doesn't come. She'll whimper so he hears her, and then he'll come running across the lawn to her. Yeah, and she literally stands there as he goes under her ears and, yeah, under her tummy, and she doesn't give much back. I think it's a one-way affair.
She's all take, take, yes. Take, isn't she?
Not much give.
But Alan seems quite happy with that dynamic in the relationship.
Very happy. If Zelda tries to walk away and Alan hasn't finished giving her his cuddles, he'll stand in front of her so she can't move.
From an outsider's perspective, this is rather strange. Do you see it that way, or is it just normal for you?
It's very normal for us, especially given that her grandma brought up a lamb right from when it was born. So very normal for us. Yeah, it's a bit of a crazy zoo here.
So what's next then? A cat bringing up an echidna?
I think we've got plenty at the moment.
You got your hands full?
I think so, definitely.
Have Alan and Zelda ever had any kind of disagreement or a falling out?
I think they must have, because they went for a stage for about probably 3 weeks where they didn't go near each other. So I think they might have had a bit of a tiff.
Any idea what it could have been about?
No idea. Maybe Zelda wasn't patient enough in standing there until Alan had finished giving her a hug.
Maybe she had eyes for another duck.
Might have done it. Might have been Barry.
Oh, Barry. Barry's a contender?
Well, Barry's actually the girl, so we get one egg a day from Barry, so...
This is all very confusing, Chris.
Confusing it is, yes.
Do you think it's a platonic relationship, or are we talking romance here?
I don't know. Who knows? Past life, perhaps? Who knows?
Well, they can't tell us.
They can't, no. They've got this little agreement, I think, between themselves, and they obviously understand each other, and they're happy with their relationship, so...
Do they communicate at all?
They do, yes.
How do they do that?
Well, with Zelda whimpering, Alan knows to come to her straight away. Yep. And in reverse, Alan will quack and then Zelda will come to him. So I've got some sort of love language going on there.
Very cute. That's Chris Tovey speaking to Tom Edwards about Zelda, the Golden Retriever, and Alan the Duck. And that's Australia Wide for this Tuesday. I'm Alex Hyman. Thanks so much for your company. Have a great evening.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.